Well, good morning. This is the Morning Drive on WTBR 89.7 FM. And welcome to Thursday, October 10th. I'm Brian Burkle. I'll be your host today. We are live and local this morning at our WTBR studio on Federico Drive. Today, our topic is going to be Elder Services of Berkshire County. And we have a guest in-house who's going to represent Elder Services today, and that's Isaac Scher. He's the Home and Community-Based Program Supervisor. So before we get into that topic, I'm going to check in with our weather report.
Berkshire weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Frost advisory in effect from midnight tonight to 9 a.m. EDT Friday. Today, partly sunny. Highs in the lower 50s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing. Lows in the mid-30s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Gusts up to 30 miles per hour in the evening. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right. Not too bad. I mean, obviously anything is better than what our friends and families down in Florida are going through, particularly this morning after these storm after storm. And I know a lot of people up here in Berkshire County have, well, some have homes down there, some are living down there, transplanted, and a lot of us have friends and family who live down there. So obviously our thoughts and prayers are with them through these difficult times. So if you have anybody down there, make sure you reach out to them, see how they're doing. The takeaway for me on that weather is the frost. Sounds like we're going to get our first frost of the year. So if you got anything growing outside that you want to continue to keep growing past tomorrow, make sure you get out there tonight and take care of that. So today we're going to talk about Elder Services of Berkshire County. I have Isaac Scher. Isaac, how are you?
I'm good, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So Isaac is the Home and Community-Based Programs Supervisor. So that's a lengthy title, but it sounds very descriptive.
Oh, yeah. It means I supervise things that have to do with in the home, in the community.
Mm-hmm.
I supervise a bunch of different programs at Elder Services, including our information and referrals department, caregiver support, options counseling, and many other things that I won't list because it would take the full hour.
So Elder Services of Berkshire County, let's start with a very broad question. What does Elder Services of Berkshire County do?
By and large, Elder Services of Berkshire County's mission is to support older adults and individuals with disabilities so they can stay at home for as long as possible with as much dignity as possible. And we achieve that through many different ways. So the most commonly thought of way that we do that is through home care services. So someone to come into the home who might clean or do some grocery shopping or help with personal care. So if an older adult has issues completing those tasks on their own, they don't need to move into a nursing home in order to get assistance with those tasks. You can get help in the home for that. We have a lot of other ways of supporting people and staying out of nursing facilities, staying in the community, including looking for alternative kinds of housing when living individually in a home becomes too much, or if private market rentals become too much for someone on a fixed income, which is a common thing. Even supporting a caregiver in their caregiving journey is a way of keeping somebody at home. So through our caregiver support program, you know, being an emotional crutch for caregivers and providing coping methods and other resources for them is another way to keep their care recipient safe at home with dignity. So while we might think mostly Meals on Wheels and home care are the kind of bread and butter of Elder Services, we have a lot of different ways of making sure that people can stay out of nursing facilities and in the environment that they prefer to live in.
Yeah, and that's an important part, the dignity, especially for aging populations. I mean, think about all the freedoms and the pride that we have about just living our lives. And then when you reach a certain age, there's some complications potentially with aging or illness. And so those are tough things to have to adjust to. And so ensuring somebody's dignity is very important with this transitional process.
It is, yeah. It's a very common thing that we work with on a daily basis, I would say, is that it can be difficult for people to accept help if they've lived independently and performed their own activities of daily living every day, if they've always done the cooking, cleaning, shopping. So we really try to kind of ease into it when we can. Obviously, sometimes there are referrals or situations where someone really needs assistance with all of those things all at once, and we have to, you know, look at what services we can refer to. But ideally, you know, we'd start with a certain level of services, and then people gradually kind of understand that it's not necessarily letting go of doing those things. It's kind of modifying how you do something in the home, and accepting help sooner rather than later with a task means that you prevent that fall, that injured hand, that whatever incident might happen by straining yourself and pushing yourself to do things that might not be as safe as they used to be. So getting that help a little earlier might mean that you don't need to accept a very big amount of help later on. So yeah, kind of easing into it.
Yeah, for sure. And being a prevent, you know, in some way, like you said, preventing something from getting worse by trying to address it sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what in our home care program, having a case manager who regularly checks in with somebody who does a home visit every 3, 6, or 9 months, to check in with somebody, see if those services are still working. If something's not working about the services, what can we change? So then we're not kind of missing something. You know, if we notice something in the home has changed, or even something physically with an older adult, and we might notice a new bruise when we do a home visit, or a new kind of behavior, then we can talk to them about what can we change to take care of this, or prevent kind of a further slide into needing more assistance, or, you know, unfortunately, you know, we want to prevent it, but unfortunately, sometimes people do need nursing facility care. So we can keep tabs on folks through our home care program to make sure that we're kind of, we're understanding what the best level of care. And obviously these are person-centered programs. So while the case manager might know, hey, if I offer you the service and you take it, then it'll take care of this need that you're expressing to me. But the person certainly has the right to say, no, I'd prefer to keep going as I am and keep doing my thing that I'm comfortable with. And, you know, we can't, I always joke when I'm doing an outreach, we can't handcuff somebody to the radiator and make the cleaning services happen, you know. I'm sure family members would like us to be able to do that sometimes, but we always have to respect what that older adult's wishes are. And, you know, we have to tell people all the time, humans are allowed to make bad decisions. They're allowed to live in ways that we might not live ourselves, in how their environment looks. But if they are comfortable with it and it's how they prefer, we really can't, you know, go in there and modify it on anyone's behalf or because we're not comfortable with the situation. If that's how they prefer to live, then they have the right to do so. So,
but it's important that, that what you guys are, the service that you're providing is that you're a set of eyes to go in and make those assessments where sometimes some of these folks may be, if they're living at home, they may have no other contact potentially at time or limited contact with other people. So they're kind of isolated. So it's important, one, that you're making, that you're just having that human connection for starters, but also that you guys are there to assess if there's a greater need and then make your recommendations from that.
Yeah, and that's one of the good things about an in-home service or something like Meals on Wheels. I mean, we're talking about Berkshire County, which is a very largely rural place where your neighbors might not be 5 feet away for you to go call to or knock on the door and say, I'm not feeling great today. So especially something like Meals on Wheels, which is generally a Monday through Friday hot delivered meal around between 10 and noon, that driver who's delivering that meal needs to make physical like eye contact or vocal contact with their meal recipient. So we know that they're upright, they're grabbing the meal from us, they're saying hi, and generally a Meals on Wheels driver would be able to spare a few minutes to say, how you doing today? You know, they'll get to know each other. They'll get to know their folks on the meal route. And as a supervisor, I've been called to fill in on meal routes before. And I always joke that I would deliver the meal, and someone would, the person taking the meal would go, "Thank you. Where's Jim? Is Jim all right?" He said his shoulder was bothering him the other day, and he said his daughter was going to be in town, so I wonder if they went to the lake like you said they wanted to. So they really develop a good relationship, and then, like we're talking about now, that set of eyes, the Meals on Wheels driver can report back to the office if there's a concern, if someone's acting very differently from how they usually do. And when I was a case manager, I'd even get a report, so-and-so has a bruise. We think she must have, you know, she must have taken a fall. Do you guys think you could add another level of service? So it's all, you know, kind of a wraparound service where one hand talks to the other. We know when the driver notices something strange. If it's not an emergency situation, they can call back to the office. Obviously, if they, if a driver were to be knocking and then they look in through the little window in the door and they see that someone's laying on the ground, they're going to call 911.
Right.
But if they just notice something's off and they say, "Are you feeling all right?" and the person goes, "Yeah, yeah, I'm fine," and they can still call back to the office and say, "I noticed something was a little off with Jane, and I wonder if their case manager could reach out to them if they have one." Or a lot of the time we'll find out that someone started with Meals on Wheels, but now they need to get a referral to home care. So we can have an advanced level of care. You know, they might continue receiving their meals, but now, you know, the driver noticed that the house had a lot of things built up in the walkways, and then they could call back and voice that concern, and then we can generate a referral from that.
Right.
So, yeah.
So when we talk about the services that are in-house, home health workers, is that something that Elder Services provides, or how does that work? What's your relationship there?
Elder Services has a bunch of contracts with different home health agencies around the county. So we don't necessarily hire any person who's going to go into someone's house and clean. We don't directly hire those staff members. But we do contract with agencies that we have a very long kind of vetting process with our contract manager. And we do need to make sure that those agencies meet a certain standard. So we always get the question, what kind of training and what kind of vetting do these staff people go through? While we don't control the HR practices of the places we contract with, we certainly do vet them, and every in-home worker gets a CORE background check and they get training. Certainly when you get to the personal care level of service, they need to have some pretty involved level of training, and they go on from personal care to home health aid, which is even more involved, and so on and so forth, all the way up to a nurse who might be able to fill a medication machine. So in short, we don't hire anybody directly under the Elder Services umbrella. We might get the phone call. You know, I need you guys to call my aide. Her name is Michelle, and I want to tell her that I'm not going to be home on Tuesday, and we'll have to let the case manager know instead so they can reschedule things. So that is a common thing that we run into. People think we're hiring the aides ourselves. We don't, but we are very, very close with all the agencies that we contract with. So we have lots of communication back and forth. The case managers are very, very often in communication with the schedulers about what kind of schedules work and don't work with their consumers and their caseload, and vice versa. The schedulers will call out to a case manager and say, "Hey, the aide is sick today. I'm going to get a replacement." So there's a very high level of communication, and I could probably still name all the schedulers I worked with from my days as a case manager. Their names are burned into my brain permanently.
Right. So, in that regard, what you guys are doing is basically referral. You have these relationships with these agencies, so that it's a easy transition for you to be able to do that for folks and connect them with these organizations. So, any of your clients that currently are accepting any kind of in-house services, as you said, sometimes they'll contact you guys directly with a message for their caregiver, their staff, the person who's coming in to do the care. But you're saying that they should be directly in touch with that agency, not with you. Is that the preferred means of communication, or?
It really depends on that person's comfort level. There are some people who are very comfortable calling a scheduler and saying exactly what they want and need. Some people, that's inconvenient or, you know, it might be kind of daunting to work with this very structured system. So we leave it in their hand. If they prefer to do that, the case manager still needs to know about changes to services. Mm-hmm. So generally we'd get those changes from the scheduler. But I would, well, I can't really speak for every single, there's many, many people who get services through us. But I would think the majority probably would find it easier to report to the case manager. The case manager reports to the scheduler. Mm-hmm. But there's no ideal pipeline. It's once again, it's a person-centered program. So if the older adult prefers to do that coordination themselves or a family member is very involved, mm-hmm. that's great. If they want to have the case manager do that, they're certainly used to it.
Okay, so there's a couple different pathways to make those communications. Mm-hmm. All right, good. So if anybody's just joining us, our guest today is Isaac Scher. He is the Home and Community-Based Program Supervisor for Elder Services of Berkshire County, based here in Pittsfield. Isaac, so you guys just relocated, right? You're down on South Church Street.
Yes.
You were on South Street down near the Lenox Line almost, right?
Yes.
And now you're more centrally located in, where the Berkshire Eagle is. For people
yep.
who don't know where South Church Street is, where the Berkshire Eagle is located now.
Yep. We are, we're known and we're moved to the Clock Tower building now. Mm-hmm. So it was a long time coming. Our old location wasn't exactly convenient for especially older adults to get to and to navigate through the building. Mm-hmm. Now we have a first floor entrance. We have conference rooms on the first floor. And we're much more accessible to certainly Pittsfield, but I would say the wider county anyways, because it's our old building was kind of up this long driveway and around this curve. And then you parked in this long parking lot and you had to walk down a hill most of the time. Now we have a good amount of parking spaces reserved, maybe, 15, 20 feet from our front door. So it's not a very long walk to get into the building. And like I said, there's conference rooms on the first floor. So if someone needs to meet with their case manager in the office or another staff person in the office, they can walk in the first floor, a couple more steps to get into a conference room, and then we could have a confidential meeting. I will say that most of our programs function on an appointment basis. Mm-hmm. It is kind of difficult for many of our programs to take walk-ins. That's not to say people shouldn't walk in with questions. There's always going to be someone around mm-hmm. who could answer a question or have a quick meeting. But especially our home care programs, those assessments need to occur in someone's home because that case manager or nurse who's doing a home visit needs to see how somebody functions in their home. Mm-hmm. There are many other programs that could accommodate a visit in the office. Our SHINE program is very popular. That stands for Serving Health Insurance Needs of Everyone. Open enrollment's coming up. So we have a lot of people come into the office to meet with a SHINE volunteer to look at their Medicare plan and see if they need to change Advantage plan, or people just signing up for Medicare. So that's a popular one where meetings occur in the office. And there could be, we have a caregiver support group that mm-hmm. occurs in the office. So just being more accessible in general has been really, really good. And it's a really nice new office space too. So mm-hmm. we're happy to be there. Lots of natural light, which is great.
Yeah, I know the building. So because I know the building, let me just ask you for clarification.
Sure.
So if somebody is arriving there, do they park? Are they still going through the main door of the main lobby, or do you have a separate entry? Like where Wayfair used to be, is that where you are?
We're in the old Wayfair okay. space, so yeah, they could park right behind Miller Supply,
okay.
pretty much.
All right.
And then just walk right in through our front door. We get a big sign that says Elder Services up okay. in front of our front door, so
good.
It should be hard to miss.
Okay. So they can park in that lot right there by Miller Art.
Yep.
Okay, great. So I'd like to hear a little more about the SHINE program.
Oh, yeah. So SHINE, like I said, stands for Serving Health Insurance Needs of Everyone. It's very, very popular year-round. It's going to get extremely popular here in a few days when Medicare open enrollment starts. So that's a time when folks can change their Medicare plans. And Medicare is always changing. Every year, the plans change, the formularies change. Medicare Advantage plans are based on regions. So I know this year we're actually losing a fair amount of Medicare Advantage plans, or they're really changing their coverage. So I know it can be frustrating for people, but it's a best practice to check in on your Medicare coverage once a year. It's hard to do that. It can be confusing to do that. So I know people would prefer not to, but ideally, especially if you're taking some medications and you have a drug plan, you really would want to check in on that because your formulary might change, your copays might go up, or sometimes the drugs that were covered are no longer covered by your Medicare drug plan. Your Advantage plan might change some of the benefits and it might not make sense for you anymore. So they're all very specific, and it can be confusing to check in on them and try to change them. So our SHINE program has a whole fleet of very trained volunteers. I've been through the SHINE training before, and it's essentially like a 100-level college course about Medicare. And it's confusing. It's tough. And those volunteers have meetings all the time about what's changing, what's new, who's coming to the area, who's leaving the area. So our volunteers are very, very knowledgeable and very professional. And a really important thing about the SHINE program as well is that it is completely objective. I'm sure they do good work, but a lot of the independent Medicare agents, you know, they'll get paid some kind of commission usually. So they might have some kind of motivation to get you to a certain kind of plan either way. Our SHINE volunteers have none of that. They're volunteers. They're just doing this so they can help people. And because for whatever reason, they're nerds about Medicare.
Thank God.
Yeah. So yeah, it's an amazing program. It's kind of corny to say it, but it saves lives. You know, people unfortunately will cut pills, in order to make ends meet, or they'll skip utilities to get medications or vice versa. So talking to a knowledgeable volunteer who can look at, they'll look at your med list, they'll plug it into the Medicare plan finder, they'll look at what your pharmacy is, compare all of these different variables, and then just show you if you went with this plan, with this pharmacy, this is what it would look like. If you went with these different options, this is what your copay would look like. They'll worry about your deductible. And they'll take a lot of the guessing out of it for somebody. Ultimately, it still will be that person's choice. So that person might choose something that is costly, but because they have some kind of brand loyalty, whatever their reason is, but at least the SHINE volunteer can show someone every option and they're going to have zero monetary gain from saying, this one is going to be the cheapest. When they say that, they actually, that's the truth.
Right.
So yeah, the SHINE program, like I said, it's going to get extremely popular here in a few days when Medicare open enrollment starts. So people should, if they want to check in on their plans, they should try calling now and try to schedule an appointment. I will say that the volume of calls becomes so much that I'll encourage people to leave one voicemail. Leaving multiple voicemails won't bump you up higher on the list, and the SHINE program will call people back. They will call you in the order that you left a voicemail. So, you know, I cover the phones all the time, and we'll get the people who are kind of nervous that they're not being heard. They are. It's just that we have so many people who want to check in, and I'm sure with a good amount of changes to the different plans this year, we'll have a lot of folks who want to talk to a SHINE volunteer. So we'll take appointments all throughout open enrollment, and they'll be straight out. Those volunteers do a lot, and we really, really appreciate them. So
yeah, that's fantastic. I'm glad they like to do what they do, because it is such a fluid system. Like you said, there's always these changes. It's hard to keep up. I have trouble keeping up. And so it's so fantastic that you have people there who can navigate without any bias as to what is the best process for people. And then ultimately, they still make their own decision based on that interpretation. So you got someone there to interpret all this for them, essentially. And like you said, to call, to schedule one of these assessments or counseling sessions, what is the number to call?
413-499-0524. And then you just ask for the SHINE department. We answer our phones live 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Our information referrals department does an amazing job of answering the phones every day, every call that comes into the agency. So if it needs to be transferred to a case manager, if it needs to become a referral, if it needs to go to the SHINE department, to any other department, we will answer those phones live. If we don't catch your call and you leave a voicemail on the general inbox, we'll call you back. I know that's a pretty rare thing in this day and age. There's no, you know, you don't call the number and hear press one for this department. You just immediately get a person who says, good morning, Elder Services, and then you go from there. So if they want to talk to the Shine Department or any other department, 413-499-0524. And if you know who you're looking for, you could say their name. If not, we can help you figure out who you're looking for or what kind of referral you might need.
All right, great. And so the other thing I wanted to ask you about before we take our break, as far as to become a client, what are the criteria?
So for home care, people would need to go through an assessment with a case manager. And there's not necessarily one criteria. It's more that, you know, if someone only wanted cleaning, they most likely would not open up for home care services. Typically, a person who gets home care services through Elder Services has a kind of combination of needs. They might need some cleaning, some grocery shopping, some laundry done, and some help with a shower or some mixture of things like that. You know, they might need meal prep, and they might need an emergency response system, and then supervision while they're in the shower. And they might not need someone to help them transfer in and out, but they, in the case that they feel unsteady, they might need someone to come help them. So there's no one way to be eligible, but we will tell people, you know, the case management assessment is free. So even if you're on the phone with us and say, I only want one thing, we'll say, well, that one, you know, you only want someone to go grocery shopping for you, you might not be found eligible for home care, but you're more than welcome to go through the case management assessment. The case manager, their questions might kind of reveal that you actually have more needs than what you're telling us over the phone right now. So while we might tell someone typically wouldn't open for home care, if someone really wants that case management assessment, then they're more than welcome to it. So the case manager would determine the eligibility, and that's a tool that we get from the state. When they do that home visit, they're asking questions from a state tool that they have loaded on a computer, and they're plugging the answers in, and then at the end of the assessment, they get that functional impairment level, they call it, which says this person is functionally impaired to the level that the state is willing to subsidize their services. That's why the name is State Subsidized Home Care Program.
So people can come to you with different expectations in a sense, and then you guys do your assessment, and it's a level standard assessment. So that everybody gets the same questions. And then from there, you can determine whether or not, if there are any services that, are required for this person, and put those into motion.
I like to explain it that the state has this pool of money that they've set aside to help offset the cost of in-home services so people can stay at home. So they're entrusting us with a certain amount of that money, and the case manager doing that assessment is going through the state's criteria. And if they're found eligible, then that's the state saying, yes, we can use that money to subsidize their in-home service. And there also is a financial component that's not tied to eligibility. It's just tied to if they have a copay or not, or if they pay for a percentage of the services.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So our guest today is Isaac Scher with Elder Services of Berkshire County. And Isaac is the home and community-based program supervisor. So we've still got plenty to talk about Elder Services, and there's so much that you guys provide for this community that's so important. So we want to make sure we address as much of that as we can today. But we are coming up on the top of the hour, so we are just going to take a pause for our station identification and hear from some of our underwriters, and then we will return.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield.
It's a whole new way of life.
Well, let's hear it. Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here. With locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from Evgo Hypnosis. Join Evco Hypnosis October 17th for the inaugural Hypno Mixer for singles at J7 on Winter Street in Pittsfield. Discover the benefits of hypnosis while mingling with other singles in a relaxed and enjoyable setting. For more details and to register, visit evcohypnosis.com.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'd be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
Are you ready to volunteer? Does your organization need volunteers? Let Berkshire United Way be your guide. We can help you use your time and talent to serve people in our community. Visit volunteerberkshireuw.org or call us at 413-442-6948 to get started or learn more. Again, that's 413-442-6948.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Every Sunday night at 10 p.m., something strange happens to the airwaves of WTBR-FM. It's called The Mix. It is an experience like no other on this part of the planet. Witness a collection of fresh and classic beats that are guaranteed to make you move. The best part is, it is mixed completely live, uncut, unedited. So, for an exciting end to the weekend, tune your radio to WTBR-FM Sunday nights from 10 to midnight for The Mix.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, and good morning. Welcome back to the morning drive. And in studio today we have Isaac Scher from the Elder Services of Berkshire County. Isaac is the home and community-based program supervisor, so we've got a lot to cover about today on, as far as elder services and the services that are provided here in Berkshire County. Isaac, I was just going to say that I've gotten much better at that little intro. I used to break in before that little honk, and I used to, you know, interrupt my intro. So I've learned to wait for the honk. I've gotten better at this. So before we get back onto this subject, we're going to check in with the National Weather Service again.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Frost advisory in effect from midnight tonight to 9 a.m. EDT Friday. Today, partly sunny. Highs in the lower 50s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing. Lows in the mid 30s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Gusts up to 30 miles per hour in the evening. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right. Like I said earlier, we'll take that over what's happening in Florida. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to anybody that we know down there. So be in touch with your loved ones down there. Make sure they're okay. So Isaac, let's talk some more about elder services. One of the questions that I have is what is the age at which someone can become a client, and are there exceptions to that?
So typically our programs are predicated on the fact that someone's 60 years of age or older. So home care certainly adheres to that. Same for our nutrition program, Meals on Wheels. Although for home care, if someone's under the age of 60 and has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's dementia, they would be eligible for home care services. Our options counseling service, which is a long-term planning service, usually ends up focusing on housing. That's also for folks who are 60 and up. But a lot of these programs can focus, or not focus, but can work with people who are under 60. So the family members around that person. Same for our caregiver support program. So if you're a caregiver to a loved one who's over 60, if they're under 60 and have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, or if you're a grandparent raising a grandchild, or an older adult parent raising a child or caring for a child with a developmental or physical disability. So while we say 60 for a lot of our programs, there's kind of this mitigating circumstance of, you know, there's a lot of benefit to if you're the 35-year-old child of someone who's over 60 and you're caring for them and you make that referral to elder services, yes, the services are going to be delivered to your parent who you're caring for, mm-hmm. but that alleviates a lot of that caregiver stress for you. And then you'd be able to jump into our caregiver support program. So while we say 60, like I said, the services really benefit many other people who are not in that age bracket. And then obviously if someone has that diagnosis of Alzheimer's dementia, they'd be eligible for home care services.
All right, great. So that it is more encompassing than just someone who is over the age of 60. There are other services and criteria that can welcome someone in as a client for you guys.
Yes, and I'll also say in our information and referrals department, when people call in and let's say someone calls us and they say, hey, I'm 43 and I'm disabled mm-hmm. and I'm on MassHealth and I really need some help in the home, we won't say, well, you don't have Alzheimer's, so it sounds like you really have it tough. Good luck. Mm. You know, we're going to provide people with resources. We practice what they call a no-wrong-door system. We have a partnership with the local Center for Independent Living, so that's ADLIB. Mm-hmm. So if somebody were to call us and express a need that we can't fill but we know ADLIB could fill, we'll refer them over there. Or if someone calls and they say, I need help with fuel assistance. I have no clue where to go. I need help with fuel assistance. Mm-hmm. Our information referrals department is very knowledgeable about local resources. They're not just some people who answer the phone and transfer calls. They train for 40 hours a year on community resources. So they can point people in the right direction. So that in and of itself is kind of this benefit to the whole community. So if you have a neighbor, we get these calls all the time. My neighbor's at this age and I'm worried about them because they are telling me they can't afford groceries that often. Mm-hmm. We could provide that person with some information and resources to help support their neighbor. Or mm-hmm. if they got their neighbor's permission, they could refer them to a program that might help them apply for SNAP benefits or housing or, you know, all the way up to a home care referral.
Right.
So while we say 60, the whole community would benefit from, you know,
right.
calling us.
So what I'm hearing is obviously you guys have an incredible network within Berkshire County. So if it's a service you don't provide directly, you know where to find that service for people and make those connections. And you can make the referral, and you can even make a warm handoff even at mm-hmm. times, right, if you've got those relationships.
So yep.
That's very important for people, because especially when they're lost and trying to find out what services, because there's so many things out there, and it can be hard to navigate. So that's fantastic that that's a service in itself
mm-hmm.
that you guys provide. Even if you're not taking them on as a client, you're still providing a service for people.
Yep.
So when we talk about service, we also talk about volunteers, right?
Yes.
So I know there's a lot of organizations here. You guys are a 501(c).
Yep.
Right? You're a nonprofit organization. And like many others here in Berkshire County, the backbone of that is sometimes the volunteer force, right? So tell me a little bit about what it looks like to be a volunteer for you and what your needs are.
So a volunteer is treated a lot like a staff person at Elder Services. They'll go through an application process. We do the background checks. We have them sign off on the same confidentiality paperwork, the conflict of interest, the conduct paperwork, because we work with a really vulnerable population. So mm-hmm. we need to be sure that the folks we're bringing on board understand that and that they agree to work with our consumers the same way that a staff person would work with them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, you know, paperwork up front. It's pretty comprehensive, but we have a really great volunteer coordinator who gets people through the process very easily, makes it convenient for folks. We'll meet them where we need to and explain things. And then depending on the program that someone's interested in volunteering in, there could be a lot of training involved in that. So if you wanted to be a SHINE volunteer,
mm-hmm.
there is a pretty comprehensive training to learn the ins and outs of Medicare. And then after you're done with that training, there's shadowing and mentoring that you go through. Our money management program is a really important one where when folks need help balancing a checkbook or mm-hmm. making sure that the bills are paid on time, so they're kind of below that level where they might have a rep payee, who is someone who would pretty much take control of the finances and give that person a certain amount of money per month. They're mm-hmm. below that level,
mm-hmm.
But they still need that kind of check-in, usually once a month, someone to drop in on them, help them make out those checks to the electric company, to the landlord, to the cable company, make sure everything's set, look at the bank balances, make sure we've got enough for groceries. We really need some money management volunteers. So if anyone, you don't need to have a background in finance. You just need to be someone who can manage your own money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to make your own ends meet and you know your bills are paid at the end of the month and mm-hmm. you have that kind of financial literacy as a person, you could be a money management volunteer. There's a little training there
mm-hmm.
and some kind of shadowing and mentoring. But then when you're kind of off to the races with your own client, it's usually once a month. You drop in on them on an agreed day and time and sit with them and make sure things are done, and then you're good to go. If you wanted to have two or three clients, that'd be great. I think a lot of the money management volunteers just take one person on, so it'd be one time a month.
Mm-hmm.
They're spending time with their person, and then they're all set. But that program could definitely use a good amount of volunteers because we have a lot of folks who are in that in-between area where they don't want to give up their finances to a third party and mm-hmm. just get $70-something dollars a month to kind of spend.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be independent. Once again, the goal of elder services, keep people independent at home with a lot of dignity. So money management, I couldn't say it enough. We'd love to have more volunteers, and you don't have to be an accountant or a banker to be able to do it. Just someone who can function on your own in the community money-wise. And we have some transportation volunteers. We have folks who provide medical transportation. We have shopping volunteers. Obviously, there's not really too much training involved with that. We just need to know that you have a valid driver's license and proof of vehicle insurance. And those are still really important. Like we talked about, Berkshire County is a rural place.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really difficult for an older adult who doesn't have transportation to make it to the cardiologist from sure. North Adams to BMC.
Right.
So that department is very, very popular,
mm-hmm.
and the demand certainly outweighs the supply right now. And we'll try to coordinate with other departments. If someone has a case manager, see if they can help with the rides, or if there's another ride service out there, we'll try to coordinate things to make sure people don't get kind of lost in the lurch.
Mm-hmm.
But we're always looking for more shoppers, transportation, and companions. Mm-hmm. We have companion volunteers. If someone just wants to spend an hour or two with a lonely older adult out in the community, could just be catching up, chatting, could be over the phone, playing board games, go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
We're always looking for more companions because, once again, we have people calling in and we have some supply, but we mm-hmm. could always get more out there.
Yeah.
And our long-term care ombudsman program as well. We have so many programs that are really pretty much have one paid staff person and then just all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So a long-term care ombudsman is an advocate that actually enters a nursing home to meet with residents, hear complaints,
mm-hmm.
and then with that resident's permission, mediate with the facility staff to mm-hmm. say, how do we resolve this problem?
Mm-hmm.
And
so giving them a voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And I always say, from working in a nursing home myself, some people might say, the French toast was cold this morning, or, well, you wanted cereal and you got eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So what? If that's someone's home, then they deserve to be able to have what they want. If I live in my house and I want to have a certain kind of breakfast in the morning, I get to have it hot and I get to have what I want.
Mm-hmm.
If someone lives in a nursing home, they deserve the same kind of dignity. So a long-term care ombudsman would be able to provide people with that. And they will visit a set number of nursing homes, meet with residents, but they also get to kind of drop in on residents.
Mm-hmm.
So they might just be walking down the hall and say, hi, I'm the ombudsman. And the person's like, what the heck's an ombudsman? And then they explain it and they say, do you have anything that you think I would be able to help you with? And mm-hmm. a lot of people are going to say, well, yeah, I wanted to shower on a Wednesday, and they told me I would have to shower on a Thursday. Mm-hmm. And Thursday is when my grandniece comes, and I'd prefer mm-hmm. to get my shower done the day before because I'm really tired after a shower.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of small. They're not small things. We might feel that they're small because we can go shower whenever we want. We can jump in the car and go drive somewhere. When you're living in a nursing home, and that's your home, and that's the one environment you really have for most of your day, it's important that you get to structure it the way you want, and it's important for someone's dignity to be able to have that voice. Yeah, so,
absolutely.
Yeah, so the long-term care ombudsman program is really, really important, mm-hmm. and we have 13 facilities in Berkshire County. They're all spread out, So we need volunteers in each area of the county. I believe right now North County is really lacking in volunteers. So if anyone's willing to go up to North Adams, Williamstown, visit those facilities, once again, you don't need to be a nurse. You don't need to be a social worker. You just need to be someone who's willing to go through some training and be there for the nursing home residents when they need a voice.
Yeah. And I'm glad you described those different roles so clearly, because I think people think that it's going to be much more involved. And these are just things that we can all do.
Yeah.
You know? So if you can competently balance your own checkbook, you can help out.
Yep.
If you have a car and you can drive around, you can help out. If you are just looking to have someone to talk to, you can help out. And I think particularly, I mean, they're all important, but that last one is especially important because of mental health issues. Today, actually, 10-10 is World Mental Health Awareness Day. So I think that's important that you have a program like that. I know one of the things that you have here is the Behavioral Health Outreach.
Yes.
Right? That's another program that you do. And again, this is all about giving people the support that they need for their mental wellness, trying to break down that sense of isolation, which, of course, we all know is a major contributor to mental illness and depression. So tell me a little bit more about the Behavioral Health Outreach.
So the Behavioral Health Outreach for Aging Populations is this amazing program that we're lucky to be able to have, where we have a staff of two clinicians and one LICSW who oversees the program. And we'll get referrals for folks who have no mental health supports currently. So if someone has a therapist, but they don't like the therapist that much, but they have access to mental health resources, they typically would not be able to get into the program. So if someone has a lack of mental health support and a presenting issue, then we could enroll them in this program where they get regular outreach from a licensed clinician who can actually go do home visits, which is pretty rare in this day and age to have a mental health counselor go to your house and sit with you. They can support people in a lot of different ways. Mostly this is talk therapy. So, you know, sometimes if someone's in the midst of some very serious delusions or a very serious episode, we don't prescribe, we don't make any diagnoses. It's really talk therapy. So we'll sometimes get some cases run by us that we might not be able to have a really good effect on. But a lot of the time, if someone needs that therapeutic intervention, and they're willing to have this counselor come out or meet them in a neutral place, and they can sit, do therapy, and then on a regular basis, let's say maybe like once a week, catch up, more therapeutic listening, or if they want to try a new kind of therapy. So it's really, really benefited a lot of people, because typically if someone's had that lack of support for a long time, they might kind of be mistrustful of the system. And this is a little bit more personal. It's just two clinicians. And like I said, they'll meet people in the home. They'll kind of level with them. So it's been really, really great to have that program. It's helped a ton of people. It's been very, very popular. Our LICSW needs to screen the referrals. So if anyone's interested, they could call into the agency and talk to our clinician, Hillary, and she would have to hear the details of the case and figure out if it makes sense as a referral for them. And then they would go from there. But yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, because it's an amazing program.
Yeah. So again, we're talking about Elder Services of Berkshire County and the services that are provided here for our community. Isaac Scher is our guest. He's the home and community-based program supervisor. Isaac, when we talk about, you mentioned earlier the vulnerability that a lot of the aging population and some of your clients have. I'm sure there's a lot of people out here who are concerned for their loved ones who may be, again, vulnerable to criminal activity. So different elder abuse, be it financial or physical or sexual or any type of abuse. Are there services through Elder Services that would address that, or is there some other referral that you would do?
We don't have any kind of Elder Protective Service in our office. We work very closely with Berkshire Elder Protective Services, which, as the name suggests, they're the Elder Protective Services for older adults in Berkshire County. If someone were to experience some kind of abuse, There is the Elder Protective Hotline. I don't know if I know it off the top of my head, so I won't try to recite it. But
you,
it's,
you can look it up.
It's
something we can find online if somebody needs to.
It's easy to find. Obviously, if someone, you know, were to call me and say, hey, my son is stealing from me right now. I see him. Mm-hmm. He's in my garage taking all my stuff. I'd say, well, that's a 911 call. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people might kind of have a misconception of what an Elder Protective Service can do. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to arrest somebody or take an older adult away from their caregivers. They're more about investigating a report of abuse. If it's substantiated, giving that older adult tools to ameliorate the problem.
Right. So, yeah. So if you are concerned about somebody or you feel like you're being victimized, obviously a first step could always be just call the police.
Yep.
And I'm just looking at something right here. It says there is an elder abuse portal on mass.gov.
Yep.
So you could always go to that too for some direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if it's a crime, it's going to involve the police. So don't hesitate to call the police and tell them what's going on. But and then, you know, Elder Services or any other agency in Berkshire County can help support in the with that effort.
Yeah, and I would say if you are the kind of primary source, it's always better for you to make the report.
Mm-hmm.
So if you witness the abuse, mm-hmm. and you call us and you say, hey, I saw somebody being abused, we can give you that Elder Protective Hotline phone number to call and make a report.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these reports rely on a fair level of detail.
Right.
And there's going to be a lot of questions kind of back and forth from people taking in that report. So it's always best for the people with the most knowledge of the situation to make the report.
Mm-hmm.
They make it easy over the hotline.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone's seeing that, they can call us to get that phone number.
Mm-hmm.
But I always suggest the primary source make that report, because they're going to be the ones, when that little question comes up from the screener,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're going to be the ones who have the answer.
Right, right. So obviously a question I'm sure a lot of people have when they reach out for services would be, how am I going to pay for these services? And I understand there's some of your services that are free of charge,
mm-hmm.
but then there are others that obviously someone's got to pay for this.
Yep.
So explain a little bit about how that works for potential clients.
So in our home care program, where someone's going to get that cleaning, shopping, personal care service in their home, when the case manager does their assessment and they find that someone's eligible through their functional impairment level.
Mm-hmm.
So eligibility is really only based on the level of service that you need. If we find through our state tool that you're eligible for home care services, that means that the state has said, yes, you can use the money to subsidize those services for that person. The second question is, to what level are we going to subsidize those services?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the case manager would go through a financial tool. So they want to know household income. We don't care about assets or annuities or any of those other questions, just what's the household monthly income.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, depending on that income, someone would either pay on a sliding scale fee, usually between $10 to $140 something,
mm-hmm.
or if they're above a certain level of income, they would pay a percentage of what those services cost. So when you get to percentage based, it becomes also a question of how many services do you need? Because obviously, as you increase services, if you're paying a percent of the cost of services as you increase,
mm-hmm.
your copay would be higher.
Mm-hmm.
People who are MassHealth eligible would typically not have a copay, but most people fall on that sliding scale fee. So we don't love it. You know, if we could, I'm sure we would provide services for free to anyone who needs them.
Mm-hmm.
But such as this is a state program and state tools that we use, we want to abide by what the state says to do, so we get the privilege to continue providing the services. So our case managers will go through that assessment. And a common question I get is, we're a married couple, but only one person needs the services.
Mm.
We still need to see the total household income.
Okay.
So that is a common question, and I'm sure people don't love it. It's not like we get great joy out of asking people to pay a copay, but once again, most people fall in that sliding scale fee, and hopefully it would be manageable for somebody on a fixed income. If not, obviously, you know, they can call in and talk to a supervisor or talk mm-hmm. to somebody about how they feel about the copay. And I'll also add, our Meals on Wheels program is free. It's a suggested donation of $3 per meal. They cost much more than $3 to produce. Mm-hmm. So some people think that they need to pay for Meals on Wheels. They don't. Some people never donate. Some people donate more than $3 per meal. Mm-hmm. That's kind of up to the person receiving the meals.
Okay. So as you can.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And how would the general public, how would the rest of us support Elder Services financially or otherwise?
So we're always taking donations. We're always looking for donations. If someone wanted to write a check to Elder Services and mail it, attention to the fiscal department, we'd be more than happy to take that check and process it. You know, some people donate very little. Some people are able to donate a lot. We do definitely rely on donations. We have various revenue sources to keep the programs going. Mm-hmm. But I could tell you that many of the programs are very underfunded for the amount of benefit and the amount of cost that they generate. Like Meals on Wheels, the Shine program, a lot of these programs are very, very underfunded for the amount of money that it costs to put them out to the world and the kind of benefit that it provides to the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys do a lot. You provided quite a bit for this community, particularly the aging community. So we're grateful that you are here, that you exist.
We're happy to be here.
Yeah. And that you seem to be thriving. I mean, you know, obviously aging population, we're, you know, God willing, we all get there.
Yes.
So this is potentially some services that every one of us could at some point be reaching out to.
We could do another hour if you want. I got plenty more to talk about if you want to do.
Well, we could always schedule another show. We are running out of time today. What I do want to just steal
sure.
a short minute from your time to talk about something else that I would just want to put a notice out there to the public about a fundraiser that's happening this upcoming weekend. It's called Purgatory Road. So, you know, I have an affiliation with the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention. And every year for the past maybe 10 or 12 years now, Purgatory Road is a haunted, used to be a hayride. It's evolved a little bit. Last couple of years, it was held in the woods. It was a haunted trail through the woods by the CRA in Dalton. This year, it's going to be a little bit different. It's geared towards younger children from like 4 to 9 years old. So it's a lot more family friendly. And it's going to be at the farmhouse up on Cleveland Road in Dalton. So if you go out Route 9 before you get to Windsor, Cleveland Road will be on your right. And it's going to be this Saturday and this Sunday from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Kids, I think, are 10. Parents are 5 because the kids do need to be accompanied. But again, all those proceeds go to the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention with an emphasis on youth mental health.
Hmm.
So I just want to take a second.
Of course, that's a very good
plug
cause.
That, so I appreciate that. Thanks for sharing your time with that. So Isaac, we've got about a minute left. What would you like to close with?
I'm going to circle back to saying that we always are in search of volunteers for many, many different programs. I named a bunch of them. I had neglected to mention that we always need Meals on Wheels drivers, volunteers, and folks could volunteer in our kitchen where we actually produce the Meals on Wheels meals. So we make almost 1,000 meals every day. We have amazing kitchen staff, but we are always on the search for volunteers. And like with every other program that I mentioned, you don't have to be a retired professional chef. Just be willing to come in and help out. So if you're vaguely interested in volunteering and giving back to the community, call Elder Services. That we have so many different programs. If you want to be really, really involved, we'd love to have you. If you want to give 1 hour every month, we still would love to have you. So anyone who wants to volunteer, give us a call, 413-499-0524, and just say, I'd like to talk to somebody about volunteering.
All right. And also, you can always check out Elder Services online for
yes.
all kinds of information. That's where I got a lot of my questions from today. So there's everything you need to know about is there. Thank you again, everybody, for joining us. We at WTBR, we appreciate you tuning into the Morning Drive, and I hope you'll join us every week. Enjoy your day.